Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today we continue our conversation with Frederica Matthews Green. We've been looking up at the dome, and there is an image of Christ in the dome, kind of looking down and actually kind of hovering over the altar that's in that apse. Is that correct?
Well, actually, this would be in the center where the worshipers are standing.
Okay, so it's actually before you get to the holy doors then.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay,
that's
so I look up, and that's what I see.
That's right, as you're walking in.
Yeah.
And as you look ahead of you, toward where the altar is, there is an apse in the back wall of the church.
Yeah.
What's an apse? It's like a little niche like you'd put a statue in, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
It's like a dugout half-circle space in the floor and a curve, a half-dome in the back wall. It's larger, a little bit larger than that, goes all the way up to the ceiling. That's the apse. And in the apse, there will be a painting of the Virgin Mary. And she's holding her hands up in prayer. The orans position, like charismatic worshipers hold their hands up. It's really very ancient. And you'll see in the catacombs images of Christians praying with their hands up like that. On her torso, there's a circle, and the infant Christ is there in that circle, and that's meant to be her womb.
Mm.
So we're looking at the pregnant Mary and seeing the infant Christ inside her womb there.
Mm.
Now, as we look toward that, we'd be looking over the altar. So the altar will be between us and that
mm-hmm.
back wall there with the apse.
Mm-hmm.
In front of the altar, there's a wooden... you can't really call it a wall. It's not a complete wall, but it's an icon stand. It's like a framework designed to hold icons upright,
mm-hmm.
almost life-size icons. So as you look toward the altar, it would be in the middle, and then there's a big icon on the right and on the left of the altar. On the right is Christ. On the left is the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
And then going out one more step, further to the right of Christ would be John the Baptist. And further to the left of Mary would be an icon depicting whatever the church's name is. If it is the Church of the Annunciation, it would be a picture of the angel Gabriel announcing the conception of Jesus to the Virgin Mary.
Okay.
If it was St. Peter, it would be an icon of St. Peter.
Okay. And how does a church decide, or how does is a church named after a particular character?
Yes, when a church is forming, a new congregation is forming, they often will pray about, if they feel particularly drawn to the prayer protection of any saint or to the symbolism of any particular festival.
Yeah.
And, of course, we believe that these people aren't dead. They're still members of our churches. We just don't see them. They are joining us in worship all the time. They're part of the ongoing heavenly community. And it's as if when we're in worship, it's like our little church, like a spaceship, goes out into the heavens, and we join them for a while. So you can feel the presence of particular saints sort of influencing you.
They
keep, their names keep popping up. And so they'll pray about that and then make a request to the bishop, usually saying, you know, we'd like to have this name, but if there's too many of that kind already, we'll take the next name.
Now, a couple of other things just to clarify, there's also... Behind those four icons and to the left and the right, you have this thing marked angel doors.
Mm-hmm.
What are angel doors?
Yes, those are, there's in the center between the Christ and the Virgin Mary, there's a door that leads to the altar.
Yeah.
And on the far sides, there are more doors that lead back to the altar. And on those doors, there are images of angels.
Okay.
St. Michael on the left and St. Gabriel on the far right.
Yeah. And so there's, as you point out in this book, there's angels everywhere.
There's angels everywhere. They're in the icons. They're by themselves
yeah.
in their own icons. They're on either side of the iconostasis.
Okay. Now, when I walk in the church doors, you've described what I'm going to see up above me and away towards the apse with the Virgin Mary and the infant Christ in the womb and these four larger icons that we'll discuss more in just a minute here. But there's a little box here called the icon stand right as I enter the church doors. What's
yes.
that?
Yes. As soon as you come in the church doors, there will be a smaller stand, just big enough to hold a single icon, maybe like an 11 by 14 size, or
yes.
even smaller. And as you come in, that is where worshipers will first greet the icon.
Yeah.
You bow to the ground, cross yourself, and usually kiss the icon as just a sort of a way of saying hello.
Yeah.
These are Eastern cultures where there's just a lot more kissing going on. People
yeah.
kiss each other, and
yeah.
they kiss the Bible, and they just kiss stuff to show a way of honoring. So as people come into the church, the first thing they'll do is to greet this icon by kissing
okay.
it. On that icon will be the closest feast in the church year. For example, tonight, I've got a church service tonight, and it will be an icon of John the Baptist because tomorrow's his feast day.
Yeah, and in this book, you go through the festal icons and the kind of the mm-hmm. feasts and the calendar year. And one of the things that I've always appreciated about my Orthodox listeners is that they're constantly reminding me what feast we're coming up to, you know, and why that's important to know and understand, and why feasting and celebrating and fasting mm-hmm. are part of the rhythm of Christ. Christ's life, and how they believe that the Orthodox feast and even the icons that that are representational of those calendar year events are such an important part of whether you're young or old of inviting you into the experience of that aspect of Christ's life.
It's a wonderful sense of community to know that
yeah.
all over the world Christians are observing the same observance today. We're all thinking about.
Yeah.
St. John the Baptist, we're all thinking about his example of courage when faced with immorality
yeah.
and speaking out boldly, and it unites us. So
yeah.
when we feast and when we fast together, there's that paradox of timelessness and yet being caught in time.
Now, in a minute, we'll talk a little bit more because there's wonderful chapters on each of these icons, and I'm going to invite you to buy the book and read about them. But let's because you weave into the chapter on the Virgin of Vladimir, the history of there has been a battle in the church over the appropriateness of icons.
Mm-hmm.
And there was kind of in the ancient years, and then Zwingli introduced the issue. What's the basic controversy, and how have you resolved it in your own mind and heart?
Right, and I think the basic controversy is something probably occurring to many of our listeners right now, which is this sounds like idolatry, especially when I say
you're kissing and bowing.
What? You know, you're bowing. What?
Yeah.
How can you do this? And I guess the controversy, of course, was are these being treated as objects of superstition?
Yeah.
Are these idols? And the reason that it came up very pointedly about the 7th and 8th century, of course, was the rise of Islam.
Yeah.
Up until that point, as I said, there are images in the catacombs from earliest Christian times. We do have images of saints. We have Jesus depicted as the Good Shepherd. It was just natural to make pictures. But as time went by and Christians saw Islam begin to rise and to make so many military victories
yeah.
and to enslave and to conquer Christian cities, the emperor and Constantinople thought, maybe we're doing the wrong thing. And there was an icon of Christ in the city gate, and he took it down. And this caused a big uproar because, of course, the believers in the church felt that we should stand up for our beliefs no matter what.
Yeah.
But the government felt strategically it was time to get rid of all those icons.
Yeah.
Called the iconoclast.
Yes.
Meaning smashing of icons. Controversy.
Yeah.
Over the course of about 125 years, a great many Christians died trying to defend icons.
Join us for the continuation of our interview with Frederica Matthews-Grain. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.